Village. Today is Tuesday, June 18th, the year 2002. In the Fireside Room this evening, we are going to be listening to Tom Hulsinger Fuchs. Today's session number is HFT2002-01. It is titled Conflict. Me, I don't have no stinking conflict. Let's listen in.
We'll just start from there, and we can sort of fill them in as they come in. My name is Tom Fuchs, and I live in Crookston, Minnesota, former staff coordinator. We were here from 89 to 91. We've been here on and off since then to visit and to be on teaching staff. I work at the University of North Dakota. In fact, I just finished working there. I worked there for 3.5 years in the Conflict Resolution Center. Conflict Resolution Center is a place that does mediation for business, families, government, United States Postal Service, Environmental Protection Agency, you name it, we do that kind of mediation. So that's the first part of what we do. The second part was that we work with organizations that are looking to do some kind of conflict management in the workplace. A lot of organizations and businesses are looking at how do you take conflict and conflict management and deal with it before it becomes an issue. So that's the kind of work that I was involved with. A job I loved. I had a grand time doing it, but it required a lot of traveling, which as you probably have seen, my daughters are 10 and 14, and I just felt I needed to be home a lot more. So training and mediation. Our organization also did facilitation, so we'd work with any kind of organization looking at developing mission statements and those kind of things. And so that's the work that I did and I still do. I'm now presently the director of a drug and alcohol treatment center. I actually officially started yesterday in my job. So I must be pretty good at negotiating these things if I can still be at Holden Village and I started yesterday. That's right. So let's see, where do we begin? I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Come on in. You can find a place to sit anywhere. I am a middle child, which automatically makes me a mediator. Any middle children in the place? Okay, you know what I'm talking about? If you're a middle child, particularly if children are closely spaced, you automatically are a mediator. Yeah. And so middle child, I spent 10 years getting my undergraduate degree, Morehead State University, so I really pushed it hard, got through in just under 9.5 years. Hi, Melina. I also got a master's degree at Seattle University in adult education and training. So that's sort of where I come from. Spent 5 years at Lutheran Bible Institute, now Trinity Lutheran College, working in housing. A good place to learn about how do you manage conflict in the world. I hate conflict, and I do my best to avoid it. And I oftentimes, the conversations I have as a person who works in conflict resolution is a very similar situation where if they are like, you work at the Conflict Resolution Center? I say, yeah. And they say, well, I avoid conflict. And I'm like, we all avoid conflict. That's our nature. Our nature is to avoid conflict. And we'll talk more about why that is in just a minute. So looking at it, we're going to spend just about 50 minutes talking about conflict and conflict resolution. And I remember going to conflict resolution sessions and sitting there and thinking, they give me some great skills, some great behaviors, and I think, yeah, you know, the next time I'm in conflict, I'm going to be able to do this. And the next time I get into conflict, I'm like, and I couldn't come up with any words. And so we're going to talk about that experience. One quick model that I'm going to point out is that in terms of learning, we can learn on a whole bunch of different levels. One of the levels is behavior. So I could give you 10 different steps you should do when you get into conflict. And it sounds really good at this very moment. And the next time you're in conflict, you won't remember it. Guaranteed. Because we've done it. Feelings. I could say, well, you know, don't feel that way. You know, don't get emotional. You know, all of those things we're supposed to remember when we're in conflict, and it doesn't work. The only thing we can think about and work on are thoughts and beliefs. So for the next 50 minutes, we're going to talk about our thoughts and beliefs. And I want to talk about real conflict. I want to talk about the conflict you have with your children, with your spouse, with your workplace, with any kind of conflict. Because if this conflict resolution doesn't work for you in all situations, then you're not going to use it. You can't plug it in when you go to work. It's got to be able to be worked in all situations. So it works as well with Michaela when I'm working with her than it does with when I'm working with my wife, when I'm working with my job in all situations. I just want you to introduce yourself to one other person right now and talk about when was the last significant conflict. You don't have to say anything about what it was about, but when was the last really nasty conflict you were in? So go ahead, introduce yourself to somebody you don't know right now. Conflict. Give me some time frames.
1 year.
1 year?
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
5 days ago.
5 days ago.
Can't remember.
Can't remember.
Remember.
6 months, 2 years.
2 days.
Okay. One of the things we're going to talk about is how long, how many times did you replay that conflict in your head?
A million.
A thousand. A million, a thousand.
Yeah.
A lot. Okay? One of the things that we found out when we start talking about conflict, and one thing we don't ever recognize is that every single person has that experience. Whenever we're in a conflict, we always replay it. Has anybody ever noticed what happens to you as you replay the conflict?
Yeah.
You win.
Yeah. You win. You do. You win. Yeah, I replay it till I can think of all the best lines to play. You know, I know what I'm going to say, and I work out these scenarios. Yeah.
Is it conflict or hurt feelings that the other person doesn't recognize that there's a conflict?
It really is, for this moment, it's about you, okay? And I want you to stay in the you, because we'll talk about that, but that's a great point. There is that other side of it. But initially, and we replay it, and we replay it. All conflicts happen that way. And our ability to manage conflict, I hate conflict resolution. I think conflict is cyclical, okay? And I remember going to these conflict sessions where they talked about, you know, a beginning, a middle, and end. And I'll tell you some stories later about some conflict that I have. My conflicts never seem to fit that nice little scenario. I mean, Lo and I got mad at each other, and we stayed mad at each other for a year, or 2 years, or maybe the rest of our lives. You're the only person I know in the front row. You see how it works? It's like conflict doesn't just have... Here's what we call it, the kumbaya ending, you know? We have a conflict, Lo and I get mad at each other, I feel bad, Lo feels bad, we come back, some kind of group hug, right? It doesn't happen. Conflict kind of moves, it dissipates, we play it over in our head, and ultimately we either move on with our lives or we get stuck, and those are the choices we make. And over and over and over again. And so we're not going to talk about resolution, because resolution means there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. Okay? And later we'll sing, it only takes a spark to get a fire going, right? I mean, isn't that how it goes? It's not that way. So what I want you to do, actually before we do that, I am dyslexic, and so I have a terrible time writing on the board. Is there anybody that would like to be Vanna White today? Sandy, all right. Sandy's going to be, you wanted to be Vanna White?
Yeah.
You can help. We're gonna come up with, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to just shut your eyes and go back to that very significant conflict you've had. It can be a year ago, it can be 3 years ago, it can be 5 years ago. But one of those face-to-face hard conflicts. And I want you to think about your own experience. What kind of feelings, what kind of reactions your body was doing, what kind of words were you feeling, what was your sense and your behavior about being right in that moment. I'll give you about 30 seconds of silence to do that. Okay, you can open your eyes and come back into the moment. One of the things that I want you to recognize is that reliving a conflict experience for 5 minutes or more lowers your ability to fight off disease for the next 6 hours. Mm-hmm. 6 hours. That's how much conflict affects our own autoimmune systems. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Even reliving the experience of conflict. So we generally don't take you longer than 30 seconds because now it'll just be an hour till you're to get a cold. So what are some of the words you came up with? What are the feelings you have when you're in that situation?
Angry.
Angry, right. We're very angry about it, aren't we? What else?
Fearful.
Frustrated.
Oops.
Sad.
Okay, hang on 1 second.
Wait, we can't see that one.
Okay, sad.
Hurt.
Mm-hmm. What else? Out of control.
Yeah,
I
can't see that one.
Yeah. We all... Well, but it's okay if you can't see them, just as long as we get the words down, and we can look at them in a little bit, but we'll write the words down. Out of control. What else?
Confused.
Slow down. You can just use that dark one if you want.
The blue.
Use the blue. I think that's the one that... Confused. What else?
Powerless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very often there's a sense of powerlessness. What else?
Maybe a little guilty, too.
A little guilty. Say more about it. Guilty.
Well, there's usually two sides to any conflict. And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe
yeah, you're kind of, yeah, confused, a little guilty. What's going on here? Is this my fault? Yeah, what else? Any other words? One, a couple more.
Inadequate.
Embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. A lot of embarrassment. What about physical responses?
Sick your stomach.
What's that? Sick to your stomach. What's that?
Tightness in the chest.
Tightness in the chest. Please see a doctor immediately. No, there's a tightness in the chest. Uh-huh.
Short of breath.
Is there any flushers in the room? I always feel that my ear's getting really red, okay? And I feel like a thermometer because I'm bald now and I feel like the heat just moving up the top of my head. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Now, all of these words, anger, fearful, frustration, sad, hurt, out of control, confused, powerless, guilty, inadequate, embarrassed, tight chest, shortness of breath. These are all common experiences. I want you to just think now, you're thinking about this in the very moment. But what would be the words that you would use to describe the other person? Okay, right here. Go ahead. What is it?
A bitch.
Very good. I like the way this started out. A bitch. Yeah. That's B-I. Okay, you know how to spell. That's the one word I can spell. Bitch. What else?
Idiot.
Yeah.
Stubborn.
Unreasonable.
Okay, they always come up with these really quickly, don't they?
Irrational.
Mean. Is that yours? Excellent.
Rigid.
Right. They're very rigid.
I missed two.
Oh.
I missed between.
Mean.
Irrational.
Mean and irrational.
Insensitive.
Fragile.
Fragile. Now that conflict, other words about that other person right in the very moment.
Shallow.
Clueless. Excellent.
Wrong.
Yeah. Wrong. My favorite, my personal, self-righteous prick. That's my personal favorite. There's just that kind of that in-your-face self-righteousness, and it's just like, self-righteous prick. Oh, there you go. Other ones?
Unwilling to listen.
Closed-minded, closed off. Okay.
Can we erase the anger trip?
Yeah, we'll just work over there and then we'll be done. Other ones?
Insensitive.
Good.
Okay, other ones?
Blind.
Not physically, but mentally, right?
They're sure worse off than we are.
That's probably good. Thank you very much, Sandy. Let's give her a big hand. Play golf clap.
A round of applause.
These words we have developed with educated professors, with legislatures, with kids, with pastors, with Presbyterians, with Lutherans, with Baptists, with Jewish people, with you name it, we've done it. Every race, every creed throughout the country. And the words are exactly the same. The quality sometimes changes depending on the group that you're in. But the very words, the experience of conflict is the same for every single person. And that is such an important component for us to remember. So we're feeling fear, angry, fearful, frustrated, sad, hurt, out of control, confused, powerless, guilty. And we think of the other person as blind, stupid, closed, insensitive, fragile, shallow, clueless, wrong, self-righteous pricks. And what is strange about this experience is that we never get the person, when I say, well, what does it feel like to be in a conflict? They say, nah, it felt good. Kicked their butt. I felt really strong. We don't ever feel strong in conflict. It doesn't happen. It does not experience. I just had a great conflict with my 14-year-old. Is she here? Right here, Jillian. Jillian and I just had a great conflict. She's up there in the balcony. We were fighting over whether or not she should do laundry. Because I wanted her to do laundry, her mom wanted her to do laundry, and she didn't want to do laundry. And in that experience, Jillian is thinking of me. I know it, right, Jillian? Idiot, stubborn, unreasonable, and rigid, right? And guess what? I'm thinking of Jillian as stubborn, unreasonable, rigid, irrational. I only ask her to do a small thing. So conflict is always a mirrored experience, okay? And no one, absolutely no one, feels strong. And this doesn't make any difference whether you are the boss, whether you are the parent, whether you are... It just doesn't matter, you know, trying to get your kids to bed. And that's a great experience. You know, I tried to get Michaela to bed one night. She doesn't remember this anymore, but she's about 6, 7 years old, and I got her laid down, and Michaela pops right back up. Now, I've done everything I'm supposed to do, right? you know, the bed, the book, the blah, 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 you know, the prayer, the extra glass of water, the extra hug, the extra kiss. Isn't that how it goes? Yep. She gets right back up. I'm like, Michaela, we've been through this. Get back to bed. She goes reluctantly, but goes back to bed. She gets up again. I'm like, Michaela, you know, what do we do the first time that they don't, we think they're hard of hearing? We start speaking it louder. Michaela! Right? Isn't that what we do? We raise our voice. Now, I'm feeling a little bit frustrated and hurt and a little out of control and confused. I did my part, okay? And Michaela goes back to bed, and I tuck her in, and she gets up a third time. This time, I'm like, get your ass to bed. In the best conflict resolution I can probably use when I'm tired. And she's walking back, and she's like, poopy butt. Poopy butt is equivalent to asshole, and it usually ends up on this list, doesn't it? Okay. Our kids and all of our styles of managing conflict are relatively unchanged from 6 years old. They really are. They're relatively unchanged. Okay? And the only way that I believe we can begin to talk about peace, about having less conflict, is to look at our experience and recognizing that the experience for the other person is exactly the same. We call it the fundamental experience of conflict. Fundamentally, when we get into conflict, we feel weak, not physically, but like loss of words, a loss of control, loss of being able to argue and to have good conversation. And what happens is we can't take their perspective at all. Okay? So we just shut off the other person. Which is why we go right to this bitch, idiot, stubborn, unreasonable, rigid, and mean kind of orientation. Okay? We automatically move there. And Michaela, at 6 years old, was there. And I was there too, because I'm thinking, you know, unreasonable, mean, irrational. I mean, what's going on? So we do this over and over again. Any questions about that? Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so often we talk about conflict and conflict resolution, and it's, unfortunately, it's white male middle class. It's get rational, you know, pick 5 or 6 different solutions, evaluate the solutions, and pick the best option. You've heard this stuff? Well, is there any rational words up here? No. We used to spend 1 hour talking about emotion in conflict. And then after we started working longer and longer with it, we started spending all our time talking about the emotion and less time talking about the rational. Because the rational component, the place we want to go, and what we try to tell ourselves are all of those things that try and keep us somewhere in the zone of control. And that's what we're really trying to do. Does anybody know what are the common phrases or terminology for when you start to get out of conflict? What are you supposed to do? Do anybody remember the rules of conflict resolution or how you're supposed to deal with conflict? Anything?
Take 3 deep breaths.
Take 3 deep breaths. That's right. Count to
10.
Like, that's some magic number, right? I want to count to 100. What else? I mean, there really aren't a lot of rules about conflict. And we keep living this over and over again. And the frustration I have, and I hear it as much at Holden as I do anywhere, is this sort of peace. You know? And we want to be peaceful people. And yet, we have done very little to understand our own conflict dynamics. Okay? There are really no words for conflict other than mad, you know, frustrated fight. You get pissed off at each other. There are no good kind of terminology phrases for conflict. Unless you guys can think of some. Anything that you can come to mind when you talk about a conflict? You see, I had a fight. But there's no good words to talk about the experience of conflict. So, make sense? Mm-hmm. We're going to move on because we don't have that much time. These words, I'm just going to talk a little bit. We're going to kind of move on and we're just going to erase these middle words because these words will work as well as those words. we started to think about, well, why is the human experience of conflict so similar? And what happens to us when we get into conflict? And so we started to talk about, and there's a lot of work that's been done on the body's response to conflict, the autoimmune system's response to conflict. We have conflict really affects us deeply. It really destroys our immune system. We become much more prone to diseases, including heart disease, cancer, all sorts of things. And there's a little part of our brain that controls a lot of these emotions, and it's called the amygdala. It's an almond-shaped brain, and it sits right on the lower part of our old brain. You can see mine right here, see it? The amygdala controls our emotional, it's like an emotional gateway. Our hippocampus, our hippocampus remembers Bob. Like, I remember that I know Bob. My amygdala tells me whether or not I like Bob. It attaches the emotion to the experience and to the memory. And when we do that, what happens is that is much stronger than the fact of whether or not I recognize Bob. I will recognize him mostly by whether or not I like him. Okay? So our amygdala does that. And that little control center works for every single person. Now, our amygdala also has an emergency overflow. Okay? And whenever we get too far into a conflict, what happens is our amygdala goes on overdrive. And it transfers all of the information from visual straight to our brain. Okay? And so we see all of a sudden a snake right here. I see a snake right here. I don't think, oh my gosh, it's a snake. It might be poisonous. My body says, jump, and I jump, even before I've recognized that there's a danger here. And it's our bodies responding. And what it does is it sends visual pictures. You know that conflict I sent you into about 10 minutes ago? You probably remembered it in a series of pictures. Okay? Certain words, certain phrases, and there were these boom, boom, boom. Okay? Anybody been in a car accident? You know, in a car accident, we only remember these little pictures, and we spend a lot of our time trying to connect the pictures. That is our brain doing that. Now, they found this information out kind of accidentally. And this comes from a book called Emotional Intelligence. There was a gentleman he had a brain tumor, and when they removed the tumor, they severed the amygdala cord. And what happened was that the amygdala, which does that function, he had all of his functions, but he could not make a decision about what was more important. Okay? So one day, his child was in an accident. He was a lawyer, and the secretary said, your son's been in an accident. And he looked at his calendar, he said, yes, but I have a meeting. And then he couldn't figure out which was more important, his child in the hospital or the meeting. You see how it works? We attach emotional content through our amygdala. Now, when our amygdala fires and we do that, our body gets pumped. Adrenaline, cortisol, all sorts of responses. And that's really an adaptive response that our body has done. And it really, what the biologists say is that only through our experience and thousands of years of living, the people who didn't have this response were really killed off. Because if they couldn't respond to an incredible onslaught, then they were eaten by saber-toothed tigers and everything else. This is a really good response when you're being chased by tigers, not a very good response when you're in conflict with another person in the workplace, or you're in a conflict with a child or your spouse. Okay? So that's some of it. But that kind of amygdala response, that, you know, cortisol, blood-pumping, rushing experience, isn't all of the conflicts we have. Okay? Because we live and experience conflicts on a whole realm of levels all the time. Some conflicts are more important, less important. Some conflicts One of my favorites is I love coffee, and I make coffee every morning, and every once in a while I forget to put the pot underneath the machine. Okay? And I run, you know, 6 cups of coffee on the floor. Now, I don't come out in the kitchen and have an amygdala response, oh my gosh, I don't get all freaked out. I go, that was a bummer, my good coffee, and now I got to make some more, and I wipe it up, and life goes on. We have these conflicts, okay? Things happen. You know, you come to Holden, it isn't the same way as it was when you were here. There's a multitude of experiences. And so conflict is not just about an amygdala response. We also manage conflict every single day. And here's what we want you to think about. If we were to give you, or if somebody was to give you an award, Holden Village or your workplace, what would you want them to say about you? Sandy, I'm going to need you up for just one more time. What kind of words would you like them to say about you? What are the values you hold as the dearest values? Anybody?
Dependable.
What?
Dependable.
Dependable, right. We want to be dependable people. Another one, Wendy?
Organized.
Organized.
That's
creative. Creative, right. We want to be creative. What else?
Brilliant.
What's that?
Brilliant.
Wow. This is a good crowd.
Trustworthy.
What else?
Solid.
Loving. Kind.
Nice. The balcony?
Irreplaceable.
That's right. Other words?
Thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. Ask Jeannie. Where is Jeannie? Hey, Jeannie, you have a word? A good parent.
A good listener.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
What else? If we were to know, what kind of values do we hold as our dearest values in the world?
Integrity.
Hospitable.
That's fine. Hospitable, integrity.
Loyalty.
Spirituality. We want to be known as spiritual people. That's probably enough. Good. Okay, now imagine ourselves, and this is another common list that we create. You know, good listener, dependable, organized. Thank you, Cindy. Creative, brilliant, trustworthy, solid, loving, kind, nice, thoughtful, irreplaceable, spiritual, good parent, whatever those words are. Now imagine that we want to be dependable, organized, creative, brilliant, trustworthy, solid, loving, kind, nice, thoughtful, while we're calling people a bitch, idiot, prick, stubborn, unreasonable, rigid, mean, irrational. You see what I'm talking about? We live with a certain set of values, an internal, we call it a homeostasis, internal kind of a set point. And everybody's set point is different. But we have these words that we've identified as, this is who I am, and this is who I carry around. I have in the new office I just moved into, it just said, it says, God, thank you for, you know, allowing me to be a kind, creative, thoughtful, loving, important person, but now I'm going to have to get up. And I'd like you to be with me for the rest of the day. Isn't that the truth? Okay. These words, you know, when we're feeling sad and hurt and out of control and confused and powerless and guilty, can we be organized and creative and brilliant and trustworthy and solid and loving and kind and thoughtful? Do you see how it works? We as people, and it's all people, have kind of this internal idea of who we are. And we carry it around in our invisible identity, and we try to live it out through most of the day. And honestly, we believe that most of us do this all the time. Okay? Most of us actually live in this place. I'm going to just erase half of it. Most of us live almost all the time in this sort of solid, you know, incredibly calm place where the little conflicts that happen in our lives affect us, but yet we don't lose it, okay? We're good, we're solid. Does this make sense? I feel like I'm talking a lot. Questions? No? Now, we call it a homeostasis, and what we think is that on a continuum of between peace and conflict, every single person has a homeostasis. Homeostasis, I don't know, S-T-A-S-I-S-A-L-O-N. It comes from Walter Cannon's work. He was the guy that came up with the fight or flight response, which is that amygdala. You know, that's that kind of amygdala response. And what he said was that all living things have homeostasis. Our body has a homeostasis. Our responses to conflict. But we want to talk about this as within a certain band between peace and conflict, we have this sort of life that we live. Sometimes we're up, sometimes we're down, but we really move through most of our lives without coming out. It was at Hank, and I missed your name. What was it?
Carolyn.
Carolyn said, I don't really remember when the last major conflict I had. And that's not so unusual, because we all have kind of a homeostasis. And this place probably has a better homeostasis than other places. Holden Village is a place where we talk about welcoming people into the community. And it's all about identity with values, spirituality, care for the creation, whatever those identities are, strong community sense. Now we move along through the world, and every once in a while we'll get triggered by life's events. And life's events affect us, okay? And the good events allow us to be riding high, okay? I mean, we get new jobs, we are able to come to Holden Village, we're able to retire, all of those things. Kind of, we move through life along our homeostasis. And every once in a while, something just shoots us out, okay? That is an amygdala response, okay? Does that make sense? So we don't ever know. Or we do have some awareness that all of you, every single person in this room, has an awareness of what happens. And we even have words for this coming out. The straw that broke the camel's back. Okay? That's really the edge, isn't it? Okay? And we know that sometimes it takes two or three things to knock us out. But we can't really tell you or anybody where we're at any one point, okay? And sometimes if something surprises us, then we get thrown out. I'll give you a good experience. I was in Target. This was a long time ago. We were living in Seattle, and we were buying a Barbie doll for Jillian. Jillian was very young at the time. She was going to a party, and we went after church, you know, to the Factoria Square Target store. And I tell you that we were just after church because I want you to know that I'm a kind, loving, caring, spiritual person. Okay? We're in Target, and we came to the Barbies. They're on the end aisle, and they're marked $8.50. But they're poorly marked, so we scanned them on the in-store scanner. And they scan up at $10. And we're like, you know, we're like normal folks, you know, we want to get a bargain. Actually, we probably are more bargain shoppers than anybody we know. And we checked out the other ones, and Pam found a toy manager, and she's like, what's up with this? And we showed it to him, and he said, you know, it's marked wrong, that really should be $10. And we're like, okay. He said, but since you pointed it out to us, we'll give it to you for $8.50. We're like, cool, you know, how often do you get a bargain at Target? How do you do it? He said, just take it to the front, and when you check out, just tell the woman that it's only $8.50. Yeah, and we said the same thing. Yeah, right. You know, we're not dumb. Okay? And we want to stay in our homeostasis. We're like, yeah, come on. He says, no, they'll know what to do. We're like, okay. So we went through the rest of Target. We bought the other $90 you're required to buy because I can't escape Target without spending $100, you know? Got to the checkout, start checking out, beep, 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 you know, doing all those things. Come to the Barbie doll. And I said, ma'am, the Barbie doll is going to ring up at $10, but it really should only be $8.50. She said, how am I supposed to believe you? I'm like, this is not going according to plan. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Pam jumps in, says, tells a story. She said, anybody could tell me that. I'm like, Pam's like, I'm going to go find the toy manager. I'm like, thanks a lot. Leave me here, you know. This woman just keeps ripping on me, okay? Okay, now, I have a nice homeostasis, okay? I'm doing okay until I get to Target. Now I've started to bop down a little bit. I got a little trigger, okay? And then all of a sudden, she said, how are you going to pay for this? She charged me the $10. She rang up the rest of the stuff, and I said, I'm fumbling. I said, credit card. And she said, okay. And she took my credit card. She said, I'm going to need to see an ID. And I'm like, oh. You know, I know she's getting me now, okay? And, like, nobody asks for ID in Target. I mean, certainly not me, Mr. White Male, balding 35, 40-year-old dude. I mean, she's like, I'm like, okay. And I gave her my Washington license, and it happened to be the expired one, the one with the clip corner.
Oh.
She said, I'm sorry, we're going to need to see a current ID. I'm like, no, no, no. By this time, my voice level is rising. You know what I'm talking about? So I'm talking like, no. You know, we're talking right on the edge now. She should have recognized this. I said, no, no, you need to, no. She said, no, no, that's okay. I said, no, that's not okay. You need to call a manager. She said, I'm not calling the manager. No, call up manager. She said, no, I'm not calling manager. I said, what is your name? I'll take this up front, you know. She said, I'm not going to give you my name. I'm in Target. I mean, I'm like, what? I said, and this was the last rational thought I had in Target for about 6 months. I said, what is your employee number? I said, I'll take this to the manager. She said, I'm not giving you my employee number. She shoves my stuff in a bag. Kind of pushes me out the end aisle. I'm like, call a manager. She said, no. I said, if you won't, I will. And I whistled as loud as I can whistle. About 100 times louder than that. In the middle of Target, Sunday morning rush.
Right.
You have ever whistled in a Target store? Everything goes dead. It's just like when the power goes out at Holden. And I'm like, I need a manager over here. I am so far out of my homeostasis. I can barely think. And like 27 managers from every department run towards me. And they're all like, what's going on? And I know that there's a security man. Yeah, we got a cruiser on aisle 13. All you have is Tom. My wife knows my whistle. She's embarrassed. She's dragging a 6'5" toy manager with her. Everybody tries to get involved, and they're like, and I'm just like, I'm so emotional now. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about that real conflict that, you know, and I know that I was thinking bitch, idiot, stubborn, unreasonable, and I know that the woman was thinking the same thing about me. Well, I didn't know that at the time. So they're like, we're really sorry, and they learn your first name. They know how to handle irate customers. So they're like, oh, we're really sorry, Tom. You know, here's a $10 gift certificate for you. You know, they're talking really slowly. And I'm like pissed off. You know what I'm talking about? And they basically give me a free Barbie doll and a $10 gift certificate. And they push me out the door. And I'm standing outside of Target with a bag and blah, 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 blah. Now that's conflict. Pam and I, we go to somewhere to eat. I think Kentucky Fried Chicken. I couldn't eat a thing. I was just so mad. And what do I do immediately? Critical conflict replay. That's what we call it. CCR. Creedence Clearwater Revival. Critical conflict replay. So we We get back into the car. Pam says, well, what are you going to do? I said, take me back to Target. She's like, what? I had to go back to Target. Okay. Why did I have to go back to Target? Okay. Because they thought it was about $10 and a Barbie doll. And it had nothing to do with $10 or the Barbie doll. In fact, I wouldn't have given you $100, and I know they would have given me a lot more than $10 had they known. I've been telling this story for 10 years now to large groups of people for money. I won't.
What happened to the lady
after? But I will tell them that. But I got back to Target, and I stepped out of the car. Pam wasn't going in with me. She was going to drop me off, you know. I reached for the Target door. My amygdala fired all over again. I became emotional. I couldn't speak. I found the manager. I was so, you know that feeling. I was so confused. I was so frustrated. And this happens to us. I know that experience might be way out and you may never have those experiences, but that conflict experience is the same that we all have. Okay, yeah.
My experience is that a lot of times though, rather than that, people will just withdraw.
Yeah.
And in the workplace, that's very hard when you have different conflict styles.
Absolutely.
A very troubling issue when one person wants to process through it, the other person just wants to say, it's kind of like a cold piece, and it's extremely hard to work through.
It's extremely hard to work with. And what happens is that everybody has a different homeostasis. And some people's homeostasis from the way they've lived and the way they experience conflict and the way that they've learned to process conflict is to not even go there. And they won't bring it back up again. And you know what? All of the chasing around that we do only encourages them not to deal with the conflict. And we will go there in the second session. You have to come back to the second session. That's my hook. I'm going to finish the story, and then we'll move on a little bit to those ideas. That woman that I dealt with, okay, and I went back like 5 or 6 times to talk to this manager because I could never, ever reconcile this. And I relived this conflict for probably 4 or 5 months, okay? And I was really upset by the whole thing. And in the end, like 7 weeks later, I went to Target and it was raining. And there I saw the checkout lady pushing carts out in the parking lot, and I'm like, yes! That's conflict resolution, isn't it? Isn't it? You know, that's one of the things that we don't ever talk about, is the fact that my conflict with this woman, I never ever spoke to her again. Okay? I had to resolve it on my own. And so often, we believe that we have to do it with that other person. And I think that if we can invite that other person into the conversation and they're willing to, that's just fine. Otherwise, our role of resolving the conflict, of playing it over and over again, really has to suffice. And I know that's not an easy answer. I know that's not a kumbaya answer. Okay? Because we think that every conflict we have with another person, you know, we got to stay in it till we work it out. The reality is that, you know, I saw her one more time. She's pushing carts, and I felt like I've been vindicated. And you know what? I worked at Conflict Resolution Center for 3.5 years, and it took me about a year and a half to tell that story because it didn't have a nice, happy ending. You know, and we want good, happy endings for our conflicts. We want them to be worked out, and we do. We work them out in our head. So, a couple of things I want to recognize is that, how much time do we have?
It's 7:05.
Oh my gosh. Am I supposed to stop at a certain time?
Before Vespers.
Are you doing okay? Does this make sense?
I got a question.
Go ahead.
What happens if you go to Target and you saw that she'd been promoted to manager?
I probably would have had a really hard time with that. Yeah, I would have had a really tough time with it. You know, one of the things I want to recognize is that from the work I've done in conflict, and I think the reason that I did conflict resolution training for such a long time is that I have not always been the best person to deal with in a conflict. Okay? I can be a real terrorist. I can be a real promoter and a real dogged follower of conflict, believing that everybody should resolve conflict the way I resolve conflict. Okay? And I think that we have to begin to recognize, for everybody's experience, that conflict is really an individual choice. And some people, after they come out of their homeostasis, we believe there's two major components to conflict resolution. One of them is empowerment. In other words, getting clear about why the conflict happens. Okay? Explaining it to ourselves. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's conflict with weather or conflict with another person. We have to explain it to ourselves. We have to work this out in our head. And that's why we replay it, because we're working it out in our head. So we're changing the dialogue. We're changing the scenarios. We're playing it until we win. Was that what you said, Dane? Until you win? We're playing it out because we have to make sense of bad experiences in our lives. Also recognize that conflict is one of those places where we actually forget. Okay, our brains are set up to not remember really severe conflicts, because if we did, they would drive us crazy. If we had to think about all the bad things, that's what forgiveness is about. That's what reconciliation is about. That's what our whole sense of spirituality is about, is it allows us permission to once recognize clarity about what's going on in the situation, but also recognizing that you most likely, in almost all conflicts, both had some play in this. Okay? Now, I'm not talking about right or wrong. I'm talking about reconciliation. I'm talking about the way we resolve things in our brain. So empowerment and recognition are little bridges that sort of move us back into our homeostasis. We get clear. We don't get clear. We make headway in resolving this conflict with another person. It falls back. You know, we do these little mental gymnastics with our conflicts throughout the way when we move through our lives. And in the end, we try to get back. And sometimes, like Dave was just talking about, we have a conflict with a person that is seemingly unsolvable. They're not willing to negotiate with us. They're not willing to talk. And what happens is that the homeostasis between the two people just gets lower. Okay? It's just more conflictual. So we start to erase. We have less peace with that person. Okay? And we've just sort of moved down. Okay? And what happens, and some of the best work I've ever seen in conflict resolution comes from John Gottman, who does marriage research. And he says that why people stay married or people get divorced is not based on anything other than how they fight and how they make up. Okay? And imagine that. They fight, they get married, they have a nice, great homeostasis. Okay? We're living in la-la and living on love. Okay? And they get into a conflict and they come out. And then all the old adages that we're taught, and we don't really know why, like never go to bed angry, has to do with the resetting of your homeostasis. Has to do with kind of coming back. And so if you don't go to bed angry, then you at least reconcile and you get back as close as you can to your homeostasis. And he says couples that don't have what he calls the four horsemen of divorce: defensiveness, criticism, contempt, and withdrawal. Okay? And he says those just claw away at a relationship. He calls coming out of your homeostasis getting flooded. I live in the Red River Valley. We have a whole nother word for, that has a whole nother meaning, flooded, because we do it all the time. So I don't use that word, but that's what he calls it. When a relationship, one person gets flooded, comes out of their homeostasis, then there's that rebuilding. And what they do is they simply start to erode their homeostasis, their shared homeostasis, and individual homeostasis, till in the end it is so rigid and so narrow. And it gets rigid because you have to start taking words out of your vocabulary if you're going to be in a conflict with a person all the time. And so you start taking out words like trustworthy, you know, committed, forgiven, loving, I doubt it, kind, not on your life. You see what I mean? Relationships erode and erode and erode. And the more they go down, the more narrow that little ability to respond is, because people can't live that way. And of all the mediations I do, and I do a multitude of mediations, family mediations, divorcing families, are the hardest thing that I have ever experienced. And it's the one that hits me most at the center of my being, a lot having to do with my marriage and my kids, and that I just can't believe people would let their relationships go like that. Does that make sense? So it erodes. They don't ever work to reestablish their homeostasis, and they begin free-falling. Now Gottman, John Gottman, who wrote The Seven Principles of Making Marriage Work, says he knows when a marriage, and he can estimate now 96% accuracy whether or not a marriage will last. 96% accuracy. He says that he knows a marriage is absolutely doomed at the point when they have rewritten their history. In other words, they cannot remember anything positive about their spouse. And it doesn't take both of them. It only takes one. If one person in that relationship has completely rewritten their experiences through critical conflict replay, and they can't remember anything positive about their relationship with their spouse, then that marriage is doomed, and it's going to die. Either a very fast or a very slow death. Does that make sense? They've rewritten all of their experiences. And this is what sadly happens in mediation, is that we'll get two people in the room doing a divorce mediation, and one party is completely at this point and is saying, I got to get out because this is killing me. And the other person is saying, no, it's not that bad. We can do this. We can make it. And you just watch that emotional, gut-wrenching conversation about ending a relationship that both of them committed to at some part of their lives. And that's the hard part. And we don't see it any different in workplaces. Okay? When we work in a lot of I've worked in a lot of hostile work environments where we came in and we were called in as an organization, and the same feeling is there. There's contempt, there's defensiveness, there's withdrawal. You know, all of those components are working. So, I've given you a lot of stuff. Questions, comments. Does it make sense? Are there concerns? It's a new way of thinking about conflict, but it seems to work. Questions?
What's the solution?
What's the solution? I have no idea. I believe the solution is in individually recognizing that we all have to make the journey. That we all have to make a journey in reconciliation with ourselves and hopefully with the other person. But it is not a guaranteed thing. Okay, that would be the solution that I would begin to say. And another thing is, and we'll talk about this in the next session, is that there are certain kinds of triggers within our identity which suck us into the conflicts, the same kind of conflicts, over and over and over again. And by beginning, what I've done personally is by beginning to recognize what those are, I am less apt to take the bait, because I can bite so quickly, and I can become a terrorist in Burger King, right? Can I, girls?
Arby's.
Birkin. Arby's too. So much of this is about personal awareness, and it's some of the stuff you're already doing. All we've done tonight is to give you a language to talk about your homeostasis. Begin to recognize if you're starting to bump out, okay? Because that's the solution. And I know that's not the best solution, but I don't know all the verses to Kumbaya, and so that would be the first component.
Question?
Yeah.
You said you've given us a new way to look at conflict. Could you say, I'm kind of getting it, but I'm kind of not. Could you maybe say it in a couple of sentences? What's new? What's different?
What is different is that we can begin to recognize that we all have a homeostasis. And our homeostasis is, in essence, who we are. And by beginning to recognize what we're bumping up against, how much stress we're having on our lives, on our jobs, on everything, that everything affects our homeostasis. And we've so much done a good job of compartmentalizing our spirituality, our sexuality, our work life, our kid life, our all of those things that what we're saying is that you can't do it because your homeostasis is affected. If I'm having a major conflict with my marriage or a large transition changing jobs, it affects my homeostasis. And it's up to me to recognize that and to work with it. Does that make sense, Lauren?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's
some other words for homeostasis.
Happy spot.
Okay.
Comfort zone.
Okay.
Center. Balance.
Okay.
What's that?
Centered.
Centered. Yeah. Something that, and use whatever word you want to use. Some guy called it his hemoglobin one time, but I didn't understand it, but he used it.
I know that. At least for me, hindsight is typically 20/20 or close to 20/20.
Yeah.
But at least for me, one way of staying in that place is to try and be more rational and thinking about your example of the checker at Target. It seemed like at the moment that you saw her pushing carriages, you know, if you had been able, or if putting myself in that position. Thinking that 6 months or a year earlier, that gee, she doesn't want to give me her name or her employee number because she's done this a bunch of times and this is going to be it for her. And I'm thinking, you know, I know I'm not smart enough to do that when it's happening.
No.
But at least in hindsight, if I had that realization, that would have helped me.
Right. And it's a great point to recognize that all of us, every single person in this room, are effective right to this point. Right to the point of coming out. Okay? So I believe that I today am better able to recognize when I'm coming out. Okay, where am I at in my own homeostasis? How much, you know, can I continue it or do I need to excuse myself, move away from it, and re-engage? And we all do that differently. You're absolutely right. And you know what? With this empowerment and recognition concept, you know, that getting back into my homeostasis, I've come to recognize that, one, I certainly wasn't the first person she ever bumped into. Two, I have no idea what her homeostasis was like, how much stress she had in her life. Was she not trained well enough? You know, that's what I've done in terms of my own empowerment and recognition needs. I have no idea. And I'm kind of sorry that I don't have any idea what happened to her other than that. It would have been interesting to find out what was really happening. But, you know, like most conflicts, life continues to move on and we kind of deal with the experiences and we just sort of move on. And there's also situations where your homeostasis can widen. You can actually go out on the other side of your homeostasis. Okay? You can have a very much of a zen, peaceful, whatever you want to call it, a spiritual experience. Birth of children is one of those. And an experience on the other side of your homeostasis is as uncomfortable as going out. Okay, I mean, really strongly spiritual experiences are very earth-shaking. They're as emotional as the other side of it. We're just more used to the conflictual side of it than we are to the peaceful side.
How does that affect your health if you're on the other side?
Well, you know, it's great. It's actually, I don't know how it would affect your health if you actually were living out there. I think the same thing happens, but if you go out of your homeostasis on the peace end of it, I think that you much more quickly grab for some stability, and you kind of, you know, you try to sort of moderate yourself, or most people do.
It isn't as negative.
It isn't as negative as the other way. Yeah, the other way is... It is actually deadly. If you're interested in this information, Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goldman is a great place to learn more about the effects of conflict it has. Now, this idea of homeostasis or comfort zone, it applies to this group here. It applies to the village. It applies to your church. It applies to your workplace. Every organization has a homeostasis, okay? And every homeostasis, you know, if that homeostasis is on the downtrodden, you'll know that people will eventually try to get out of the organization. If you can't live your values out in an organization, you'll leave. You know, that's the idea behind this concept.
I suppose any stress in life, not just conflict, but any stress community.
Yeah. Hey, I think people are leaving.
When's the next session?
I think the next session is tomorrow. Thanks for coming. Bye. Yeah, everybody's like, we're getting out of here, man.
Stressful.
Did you say 10 minutes of that?
10 minutes
that
of going
experience.
Back will create a 7-hour... It's from Chaos to Coherence is the book that it comes from, but it affects all sorts of chemicals in your body that
okay.
From Chaos to Coherence. Dave, you come to the next session so you can find out or can I help answer your question?
Going on a hike.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that make sense that I talked about?
I think that my question is, how do you raise homeostasis among people? I mean, and I believe strongly that conflict is situational. There's some conflicts that you just have to ignore, and others that you need to process through.
And if you're in your homeostasis, you could ignore it. But have you ever had one of those conflicts that was like this big?
Right, because you were kind of out of whack.
Right.
Because you're triggered, because you're lower on your old homeostasis, you've got enough triggers going crazy.
H-O-M-E-O-S-T-A.
I have found the most difficult people to deal with conflict are those who just withdraw and don't want to talk about it. Yeah. They just don't want to. Just want to pretend it doesn't happen. And then you have this sort of unease, this malaise.
No yawning.
With withdrawals.
And you just want to know whether you're going to engage, you know if they'll ever engage you in this conflict.
Yeah. Or whether they care or not to.
I know you.
He's
a good whopper. Good question.
Yeah, the growth range.
Yeah.
Because we really grow up.
Yes.
Conflict's healthy.
Right.
Organizations that don't have a conflict are really dysfunctional.
Right.
So the question is, in terms of that model and everything, where's our growth range? And we want our relationship out of the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
We started more about each other, more about ourselves. We learn the coping skills and all of that. But does that all lie within our homeostasis?
It doesn't lie within our homeostasis. It lies with us coming out and then reestablishing and recreating and expanding our beliefs, our values, our trust, our common core.
And so in a healthy functional relationship,
absolutely.
That broadens.
As long as you go back and are able to work and reestablish and recreate that.
And bring closure.
Yeah.
And it's the first part, but some conflicts are worth doing and some are not. That's reconciliation. Is that what you were saying, too?
Yeah, you got to pick them.
Yeah, some conflicts. You're not going to pick the one with the target lady.
Right.
Yeah.
You got bigger ones.
You got a lot bigger fish to fry.
Yes.
Yes.
I
we're sitting with...
Yeah, you guys are good. Make sense?